the South of the Six podcast, bringing you the latest on your Toronto Raptors. Now, here are your hosts, Connor Chambers and Adam Corsair.
82-0. The dream is alive, baby. It's alive and well. Welcome back to the South of the Six podcast. I'm Connor Chambers, one of your co-hosts, and joined by the other co-host, Mr. Adam Corsair. Adam, what do you think about 82-0? Does that sound enticing to you?
No. Sounds great.
Lovely. Sounds great. Be lovely. Optimistic.
Love.
Find the parade.
Definitely going to happen.
I love that. It's definitely. Great. Yeah. Obviously, you know, that would mean the greatest team of all time. We might have seen the greatest team of all time here in Toronto Raptors. And they might have something cooking. Darko and the boys might be something cooking there. But before we get into it, obviously, the South of Six podcast brought to you by the StadiumScene.tv network. The fine folks over there are doing a great job keeping us all things South of the Six podcast, all things Toronto Raptors. On the web, on the news, pumping our content out. So they do a great job there. So kudos to them. Are you getting into the basketball sphere right now? Or are you still caught up in your pumpkin spice everything? Like, what's going on with you? Where's your head at?
Why can't it be both?
That's what I'm asking. Is it both? Are you sharing? Is there enough real estate space with pumpkin spice to accommodate the Toronto Raptors start of the NBA season?
I think the pumpkin spice stuff for me has sort of faded as it does come like mid to late October.
Yeah.
I'm not as all about it because it just seems like status quo now.
You've gotten that taste.
Yeah.
You've scratched the proverbial itch and now you're kind of coasting.
I got my fix.
Yeah. I noticed because you stopped tagging me in everything pumpkin spice on every social media platform ever.
Well, that would involve tagging you in everything because everything now has a version.
Is your feed, is the algorithm to your feed just covered in pumpkin spice?
A lot of it is covered in mostly like fall decor and stuff. Cause I like to look stuff up with my wife and be like, ooh, this is a good idea to decorate the front yard. And
cool.
This weekend we're doing a trunk or treat with my daughter's kindergarten class. So okay. I looked up like dope ways to decorate your car and stuff. And with that, the algorithm picks that up.
Yeah.
And then like fall, pumpkin spice, all that.
Of course. Out.
But I would be lying if I said I am not subscribed to r/pumpkinspice on Reddit.
That might have been, if you're a betting man, that would have, the odds would have given you absolutely zero money in return if you smashed that.
Yeah.
That was a subscription of yours on Reddit.
Yeah.
You decorate your house for Halloween?
Oh yeah. My daughter, my oldest, is a huge, huge Halloween fan. To the point, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, for her five. God, time flies. For her sure fifth does. Birthday, this past June, it was Halloween themed. So okay. In the middle of summer, we're decorating the house and outside and everything in Halloween. So we were that house. And it was raining that day, which sort of added to the spook to it. And we have a hallway, obviously, like a long hallway in the house. And what we did is the adults were in the rooms and shut the door, and the kids would knock on the door to trick or treat up and down. That's how we got away with
it. That's cool. So, okay, yeah. That's actually cool.
It was dope. I like that. It was really fun. So
very, very, very cool. Very smart. Mm. I mean, trick or treating in the summer is always kind of cool. I know people sometimes do like Christmas in the summer and stuff like that. Yeah. So kind of a cool little like spin off of that. Talking about spinning off, you know, Spicy P, the Raptors, as we'll break down some of the players coming up soon. Spicy P may not have had the greatest home opener. However, his fellow teammates in the Toronto Raptors found success in the home opener. They started the season 1-0, beat the Minnesota Timberwolves 97-94. I guess this is the point, the time of the season where we can let the overreactions begin and say the 82-0s, play in the parades. And but I think that's just either the supremely disillusioned or the incredibly trolly part of the fan base that would, and me being the latter, is just sort of say 82-0, the dream's alive. But obviously, you know, this team is still a good team, but they're not championship team. Let's talk about the pace a little bit, because I think that you and I both agree on this in terms of the pacing being up. The style of play was clearly different from what we had seen in the Nick Nurse days compared to what we're seeing now with Darko. And, you know, I think for the most part, the changes have been pleasant, especially from a viewership perspective. When you're watching the game, I think it's been really nice to see. the movement on and off the ball really is the thing for me that I notice has increased. So of 36 made field goals for the Toronto Raptors, 27 of them were assisted. So quick math, that's 75% of all baskets were made coming off of an assist. Mm. So that number to me shows the ball movement is really pumping there. And when you're talking about off the ball, the Raps had 34 fast break points compared to 12 from the Minnesota Timberwolves. So they almost had 200% more fast break points compared to Minnesota. So there's a lot of movement going on with the Toronto Raptors. It's not stagnant anymore, kind of what we've maybe seen over the last year or two with some iso ball stuff. Are you excited about the changes that you've been seeing with Darko and the Toronto Raptors, or is there some things that maybe concern you still a little bit?
For a game one, it was fine. I don't like to jump out the gate and try to be too critical and say like, oh, this is going to fuck them forever. This is going to ruin their season. I don't see the point in doing that. I don't see the merit in doing that. That's not to say you can't be critical of some things. Of course you can, but do I think that this is sustainable, the success that they had? Sure. I do like the style of play that they did. As you mentioned, it was very, very up-tempo, very fast-paced. And as we've mentioned in the group chat, they were terrific in transition. Terrific. A little sloppy, especially with the passing, but it worked to their benefit, or at least it evened out, because so was Minnesota. Minnesota was very sloppy with their ball movement. So the game at one point, especially towards the end of the second quarter, was a little drunk. Like, it was just sort of all over the place. But there are only two members of this team that are from the quote-unquote We the North era, right? There's only Pascal and there's only OG. So the vast majority of this team is very new. The style of the team is stylistically very different. For the first time in over a decade, you have someone not named Kyle Lowry and or Fred VanVleet bring up the ball and be the primary ball handler. Schroeder was, he's very fast and he's very like slithery, which is something different. Whereas I think Fred VanVleet was a disciple of Kyle Lowry and sort of bodied his way in. It's just different. I like seeing it. I like seeing, just a new sort of identity for the Toronto Raptors. And I think we could safely say that, you know, as I mentioned, since we have two members still on the team, I think we are safely out of the We the North era as a team.
Even though that's what you'll have to hashtag.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But I totally agree with you. At least the fact that the tempo was super high-paced, the Raptors, it didn't actually end up killing them. In the grand scheme of things, both teams had 14 total turnovers, so it wasn't like the Raptors had, you know, more out of there. The Timberwolves did get 14 points off those turnovers, whereas the Raptors got 11, so there's only a difference of three. But it was cautioned by Darko as soon as he started that this team will turn the ball over more. Right. Just because there's going to be ball movement. That's the downside to having this style of play, and maybe seems a little bit more erratic than what we've seen from Nick Nurse, and a little bit more disciplined that way. But with that, you know, quote unquote discipline comes a little bit more of a stagnant style, a little bit more hero ball, the iso ball, the whatever. I don't mind this type of style at all. I think it's really good. I think that Dennis Schroeder really fits what Darko's trying to do here in Toronto. And you can clearly see that from the first game. And we'll get into Dennis Schroeder a little bit more as we get into more into the podcast, but you know, everything that I've seen from Toronto, even post game, like I'm just talking about the team now in general. I think post game, a lot of the social media posts, the excitement from the guys, the smiles in the locker room, they were really happy for Darko. Like they were glad they got that win at home in the season opener in front of the fans. Like it seems like they're kind of got a little bit of that swagger back, that juice back. And I think it's really good to see as a fan of the team. I don't know if you noticed that in the game, but I kind of noticed it a little bit just on the bench and on the game. And then obviously it was really apparent post game and with open gym.
I saw how Scotty Barnes was very, you know, I don't want to say in his feels, but he was definitely having a good time. Schroeder was definitely a focal point, especially post game with his get up and, you know, on the floor before the game with his child and stuff. That was cool to see. You could tell just by the body language and his demeanor that Darko was really, really fucking excited to be there, to be able to do this, which is obviously your first game head coaching, you're going to be, and you expect him to be. But there wasn't that sort of bravado of keep it in and keep stoic. Nah, he sort of wore his emotion on the sleeve. I liked it. The one thing that I didn't get, and I'm not trying to down the situation. I know we're going to get to his performance later.
Uh-oh, Debbie Downer alert.
Yeah, a little bit, maybe. I didn't get the same sort of vibes as I used to with Pascal. And I don't know if that was just me with coming in with a bias and with a, you know, sort of veil of he's unhappy because of media day and whatnot. And there have been reports saying that at practice he still, like, smiles and getting involved and stuff. And I have no doubt that he's, you know, he's not completely unhappy with everything. But it just didn't seem like the same sort of Pascal being his, like, jubilant self on the floor. I don't know if you caught that vibe, too.
Yeah, and again, that's another player that we're going to touch on as we go on, but I think also, too, the fact that he didn't have the greatest game, especially for his standards, right? I think that sort of might have tinkered with some of the emotions. He was the fourth highest scorer on the Toronto Raptors. He didn't have a very effective shooting night. Well, he did from three, but the rest of the night was not great. He did contribute on the glass and with some assists, and he was a plus seven, so he wasn't a detriment, but, you know, it probably wasn't exactly the start that he was looking for, so I can sort of see that. But you know, I do think that a lot of these younger guys, a lot of the newer guys, were super happy for it, and you know, I do agree, maybe that's lingering with Pascal. Maybe he's like, you know, I'm still thinking about the shit that Masai said. I'm still thinking about the digs that I got. Like, do I even want to be here?
Right.
Is celebrating a win like this something that I want to be a part of, or do I want it to be normal? Right. Mm. And I mean, I don't think they're going to celebrate like that every win, of course. I think this one just meant a lot more for a vast majority of reasons, but Pascal is going to, I think we're going to have a spotlight on him regardless throughout the course of the entire season, and there's going to be a lot of critical analysis on him, good and bad. So we'll see how that goes, but I do agree with you that I felt like of all the vibes, his was probably near the bottom,
off. Yeah.
Speaking
of vibes, I know this isn't on the agenda.
I know where you're going. I feel like I know where you're going with
this. It's not going to show up on the stat sheet, but you want to talk about, like, good, bad, ugly, right? Good is obviously Dennis, who had a really solid game. Even OG was really good. Bad, the turnovers, and, like, you know, stylistically, it was a little sloppy in the second quarter. The ugly is, I mean, there wasn't really that much ugliness.
There wasn't really ugly. There's just stuff you could clean up, but yeah. I know what you're saying. I know who you're gonna go with this.
Precious,
yeah.
I liked what I saw. And even though there were a lot of putbacks that didn't go his way, he was like a fucking untamed horse out there. And for some reason, it didn't work with Nick Nurse, because I remember that was my main gripe, especially his first season with Toronto after the Kyle Lowry trade.
Yeah.
It was, this guy just is everywhere. He is everywhere, and it's sort of lackadaisical. I sort of still had that vibe last night watching the game, but it was working for the offense because the distribution, the way he just attacked the boards, I really, really liked what I saw from him. Again, it's not going to show up on the stat sheet. He only had 8 points. He was a minus five for the night, but still 8 total boards, 5 of which were defense, 3 offensive boards. I really liked what I saw from Precious, and he is an unsung, I don't want to say hero, but he's not getting enough credit.
I almost had him on the agenda, and I felt like we were going to talk about him at some point, so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to leave it and naturally go into it. Sure. So I'm glad you brought it up, but, you know, he did lead the bench in scoring. He actually had half of the bench scoring, with Malachi Flynn and Gary Trent Jr. having 3 and 5 points respectively. Really off night for Gary Trent Jr., but You know, Precious getting three offensive rebounds, tying the team in offensive rebound lead with Jakob Poeltl in the timeout that he was playing, providing like a spark off that. You know, he was tied with Poeltl for minutes played. So, I mean, clearly Darko's seeing this and going, he's providing us with some energy. Yeah, Poeltl's going to give you the size and he'll match against like guys like Rudy and whatever.
Rim protection.
But yeah. For rim protection, but you can still put Precious on like and you know, on most centers and on guys even like Karl-Anthony Towns for a disruption factor. I think that he did a great job once he came onto the floor, and I know you're going to agree with me with this too. Once he stepped onto the floor, it felt very different.
Vibe shift, dude.
Felt very different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like he was a really good presence off the bench. I felt like he did a lot, even though, like you had mentioned, it doesn't look necessarily the greatest on the box score. And, you know, people are probably like, well, you know, that doesn't look great. Yeah, but if you watch the game, yeah, I think you would understand his impact a lot more than just look at the scores, look at the box score and be like, well, he was kind of mid. But, yeah, I was very impressed with him. I thought that he did a fantastic job. So kudos to Precious for doing what he does best, giving us a boost.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of the substitutions, it was a little different to see that. I want to say it was certainly true for the first half, which isn't really that weird. But in the first quarter, they ran nine. Mm-hmm. They had nine total players touch the floor in the first quarter. And in the second, it was Grady that came in as the 10th man, not Boucher. So they ran 10 deep last night.
Yes, they did.
You didn't see that with Nick Nurse. And, you know, you mentioned Pascal. If you want to roll into Pascal, we can.
Pascal did have a quote, and I feel like this is where you're going with this.
Yeah, go for it.
Pascal Siakam, this is from Josh Lewenberg. Pascal Siakam on only playing 34 minutes. He said, quote, "I feel amazing. I feel like I can play another game."
So, when it's weird that we're saying quote unquote only 34 yes. minutes, because
that's normal.
That's normal, right? That's
fucking normal.
So it's not an only thing. But you mentioned that he's not going to light up the stat sheet and he didn't have a game that we're used to. I think that's going to work to his benefit because the way they're moving the ball, he's not going to get that many touches because everyone's going to touch the ball. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of 30-point game from Pascal Siakam. And maybe that's by design for not making All-NBA or whatever. But, you know, conspiracy theories aside, he was at least efficient. He was a plus 7. Hell, the whole starting lineup was in the plus column.
Correct. Everyone was in the plus column. The only players in the negative, McDaniels off the bench with minus 3, Achiu off the bench minus 5. Malachi Flynn in 10 minutes was a minus 14.
Yeah, that's bad.
Those are the three players that were minus for the Raptors. So,
yeah, look, if Pascal's getting fewer minutes and it's gonna help his longevity, sure, I'm for it. I don't hate what I'm seeing on the stat line. I mean, being 5 for 17 is pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
It's not great.
But those big buckets that you needed from him, especially from deep later in the game.
Yeah. He did shoot 60% from three. He was 3 of 5 from three. So, I mean, that's good, right? Plus 70 is 7 rebounds, 6 assists. So he almost had a triple double.
Yeah.
Everything was actually pretty solid for him, minus his efficiency.
Right.
Realistically, that's it. You want to be a little bit more efficient, obviously. And, you know, if this team wants to succeed, you probably can't have Pascal Siakam being fourth on the team in total points for the game. So, yeah, those things you probably want to see clean up a little bit. Obviously, we're discussing the fact that he didn't have the greatest game for him. But I'm not sure if this is something for you that, you know, do you think this is going to carry over? I know you've kind of alluded to this a little bit with the minutes, but do you think that maybe the inefficiencies continue? Maybe we won't see him put up as many points because he's not on the floor as much. I'll agree with you on that. But do you expect the efficiency to go up, or do you think that maybe he tries to do a little bit extra because maybe he's trying to do more with less minutes or something like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I don't know where your head's at, so I kind of want to pick your brain on that.
No, I look, he's tied with Dennis with 17 field goal attempts, so, and they were the highest of the night. So
correct.
I think that's fine. I think being 5 for 17, I don't think you're going to see that when it comes to efficiency, especially shooting. He's not going to be shooting 29% for the year. That will go up. I think he's going to be just fine. I think maybe it's just getting used to the newer offense stylistically. And again, he's distributing the ball a lot more. As you said, 6 assists. So I think it's fine. I think he's going to be fine. I don't see him averaging close to like 30 points a game. I think you're going to see somewhere in the range of like 20 to 25 a game. And that's fine.
Right.
Fine with me. And yeah, I think the minutes will hover around where they are. And I think the offensive efficiency, especially shooting, will creep back up. Sure.
Yeah. Second on the team in assists. So again, he was distributing. He was fourth on the team in rebounds, and he was fourth on the team in points. So, I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. Obviously, maybe you just expect a little bit more, but I don't think there's anything really here that concerns me too much. It's the first game of the season, probably just shaking off some rust. Again, it was a rough media day that we've gone into length about, so that could have still been a factor on his mind, and maybe just wasn't the most clear. But hopefully once he settles into routine and gets going, I would expect him to get a little bit more, be a little bit more efficient. I mean, look, Anthony Edwards shot 8 of 27.
Yeah.
Karl Anthony Towns shot 8 of 25. Like, the two of them together, quick math, shot 16 of 52.
That's terrible.
So, talk about inefficiencies. I feel like it's probably just the start of the season. The guys are getting back into the rhythm of things. They're shot. So, yeah, that's actually fucking horrible. Like, that's really bad. I mean, they shot 6 of 17 combined from 3. Karl Anthony Towns put up 10 threes and hit only 2. So he needs, if he's going to be taking that much volume, like, he had more threes than OG Anunoby and Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah.
So if he's gonna be putting up that volume, he's got to start hitting them for that team to be successful.
If I am going to pinpoint something, I know I said there wasn't much ugliness. If I am going to pinpoint something here that I think the Raptors would do well sort of pursuing, if they are going to be in it, and I want to say that you and I are still believing that they're not going to be.
Correct.
And I know, tongue-in-cheek, 82-0, whatever. But
very, very trolly if those...
Look, they're on pace. They're on pace.
Hey, so, hey, men lie, women lie, stats don't, okay?
Yeah.
Pace 82-0.
They're on pace, but... I did not like the fact that they're getting bodied by Gobert and Towns, and they just don't have an answer for big men. And when Embiid feasts on them, which he will, it's going to be bad.
That's fine. You'll throw Chris Boucher on him.
That, I was going to say that because Boucher plays him well. He defends him well.
He actually does. it's not bad.
But it's just he's not... This is going to sound terrible. He's not thick enough to go out there and get bodied... And we'll go toe-to-toe with the bigger men in the league. And maybe Poeltl just, like, had a sort of off night for his standards. Again, he was efficient and he was a +8. But that's something that irked me, is that they're gonna get beaten up underneath. They did not have an answer for Gobert. And even though he himself didn't have a great game, I want to say he had double-digit rebound. Here, let me look.
Yeah, so Gobert, his stat line, he had 13 rebounds, 15 points, 5 offensive rebounds, which obviously that's sort of like the offensive rebounds to me provide more value than defensive rebounds. So having 5 offensive rebounds, he's a big boy. I get it. Like that's a lot. It's a lot of the man to cover, but. You kind of hope that you're not giving up 5 offensive rebounds to one player in a game. That's tough. So, he was a -11 though. So
yeah. And look, good takeaway from this game. I heard this actually on the Minnesota broadcast. I watched a little bit today preparing for this. They have not won. They being the Timberwolves has not won at the Scotiabank, ACC, whatever, in 19 years. They have not won a game in Toronto in 19 years. Streaks alive.
Damn. Let's keep it going for another 81.
Yeah. Streak is alive. They have not won in 19 years.
That's incredible.
Years. So incredible. Back in the KG days.
Yeah. Back in the KG days just feels like such a long time ago because of the like Boston, Brooklyn, like
that's I'm saying.
Weird. Well, you know, we talked a little bit about the rebounds and stuff. Let's switch to the defensive side of the ball here for the Toronto Raptors. We're talking a lot about offensive efficiencies and stuff like that, but you know, when you hold a team to under 100 points in today's NBA, that's something that should be applauded. And maybe like, you know, 15, 20 years ago, it was like 100 points, you fucking stink. Like, what's the defense? Now it's like 100 points, great. I feel like a lot of people had attributed the success of the defensive side of the ball of the Toronto Raptors to Nick Nurse and his schemes and how he prepared the team. Nick Nurse isn't here, and the Raptors held Minnesota to 94 points. They shot 34, they being Minnesota, shot 34% from the field, 25.8% from three. Obviously, the opposite end of the coin of what we've discussed on the rebounds on the glass, that's where they lost. But in every other aspect, they did a really good job. They had more blocks. They had more steals. They were moving the ball better. That defense led to creation and offense with the fast break points that we had discussed earlier. So I want to get your perspective on it. Do you expect this level of defensive play throughout the season? Maybe not. I'm not saying holding every team to under 100 points. That's obviously unrealistic. But at least just this, maybe this level of, let's call it intensity on the defensive side, right? Like that's probably the best way I can describe it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I expect them to be scrappy. Mm-hmm. No matter what. And there was a lot of hands in the face. There was a lot of effort to have forced turnovers from Minnesota, off of Minnesota, I should say. So, yes, I expect the Raptors to be a scrappy team. I expect that defensive intensity to maintain. But as you mentioned, not to be a Debbie Downer, I'm going to call this game what it is. They match up well with Minnesota.
Sure.
This is a team that I don't think they're punching down on, and I don't think they hit above their weight in that win. I think that was, you match up well, you know, there's a clear size differential in favor of Minnesota. However, you can exploit that and you can win, and you did. So with teams like that, like you could say Minnesota, maybe to a degree, sorry, not Minnesota, Indiana, you can say maybe to a degree Chicago, they're already holding players-only meetings.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You expect this type of back and forth, maybe even Orlando, you expect this type of back and forth, and you expect that defensive intensity to maybe give the Raptors an edge and, you know, capitalize on a victory. But when we're talking about the top tiers, like the Milwaukees, the Bostons, the Phillies, yes, I do think they're going to be to play them tough defensively. I just don't think it's going to be enough.
Yeah, I think the defensive intensity will remain, and I think that they will continue to be scrappy, and I feel like that's kind of just in their DNA, and I feel like maybe this, at least just this game, very good, very small sample size, but maybe this game kind of shows that, yeah, maybe Nick Nurse did implement some defensive schemes or defensive mindsets into some of these players, but ultimately they're the ones executing it, and that's their brain. That's the way they're thinking. That's the way they're wired.
Yeah.
So sure, Nick Nurse can definitely still get some credit. I'm not taking anything away from that, but I feel like we also have to understand that this team's just going to be good defensively.
Yes.
They're going to be good defensively. Will they be the best defensive team in the league? No. But will they be at least like the top half of the league in defense?
Yeah.
I believe that they definitely will. So if the offense comes alive to play for the Toronto Raptors, then this team could have a different outlook than maybe you and I had thought about at the beginning of the season. I still don't necessarily think that. I still think that they're going to be inconsistent on that side of the ball, but I do expect a really good effort defensively, and ultimately defense comes from effort, and I don't see a lack of effort with this team on that side of the ball, and I feel like they pride themselves, especially guys like OG and Anobi, on, you know, blocks, steals. Scotty Barnes had 5 blocks last night.
Yes, he did. And they were
5 nice blocks from yes. Scotty Barnes last night. Like, yes. That is huge for him. He tied his career high, young career, but he tied his career high in blocks. He had 2 steals last night. So, you know, 5 assists, 8 rebounds. Like, he's doing a lot of things besides scoring. And he was 3rd on the team in points with 17. Like, didn't really have Scotty Barnes in notes, but I just, like, shout out to him on playing both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to continue seeing that from those guys that we've understood are really good on the defensive side. And I just feel like they're going to be the pillars for this team in terms of establishing intensity moving forward.
Yeah, I didn't see that much of a new defensive identity in comparison to an offensive identity. And I think you're right. I think this is, for the most part, a team that already knows how to play defense fairly well and how to be scrappy. And it, for Darko, it was probably like, I don't have to, you know, show them much. And plus, those things aren't necessarily as noticeable as a new offensive rhythm and scheme. So I think they're in a good spot defensively. Offensively, I tweeted this out while watching the game last night. I said, shooting's going to be a problem. They just don't have a lot of pure shooters on the team. You could say, you know, Pascal should be, but again, he had an off night. But as we mentioned, we expect those numbers to tick up. Barnes was fine. Dennis was fine. It was lacking elsewhere. So,
yeah, Siakam 3-5 from 3, OG and Obi 4-9 from 3, Dennis Schroeder 4-8 from 3. The rest of the team did not have a great shooting night from 3, except for the one that Malachi Flynn had hit. But, you know, Gary Trent 2-8. Oh, sorry, 1-4. Pardon me, he's 2-8 from the field. 1-4. He has to establish his 3 to get going. If he doesn't have that, he's just kind of that's a tough thing about something like that. But and obviously we didn't get to see too much of Grady Dick, which we'll talk about in a second. But other than that, that's been the same thing about this team all year. I think that they had averaged, if top of my head, it was like 33 or 32% from 3 last year, and the league average was 36. So they still have a bit of ways to go. I think they want to get back up to league average. They shot 40% from 3 as a team last night. So, you know, maybe there is some promise there, but they also shot 40% from the field. So that's not great. Like, you got to increase the field goal percentage while hopefully maintaining somewhere in around there for 3 points. Just be a little bit more efficient.
Yeah.
Talking about efficiency, and someone that kind of surprised me on the efficiency was Dennis the Menace. Yeah. Dennis Schroeder came to play last night, and kind of buried it a little bit. The lead there with Dennis Schroeder, 22 points. He led the Toronto Raptors in points. It was not Pascal Siakam. It's not OG Anunoby. It was not Scotty Barnes. It's Mr. Dennis himself. So 8 of 17 from the field, 4 of 8 from 3. It was 2-2 from the line. He was perfect. He also led the Toronto Raptors in assists.
Mm-hmm.
And also led them in plus minus with a plus 10. Pretty impressive debut from the man. He had the highest Raptors debut since Kawhi Leonard put up 24 in his Raptors debut in 2018. So 5 years ago. That's incredible. That was 5 years ago that Kawhi Leonard made his debut for the Toronto Raptors. Yeah. Do you think this FIBA tournament rejuvenated Dennis? Like, I know he had a pretty solid year last year, so I'm not going to take anything away from that. But this FIBA tournament, he looked like a pretty different beast. He had that one game where he was awful in the FIBA tournament. His teammates sort of picked him up. He ended up winning FIBA MVP, and now he's back in the NBA with the Toronto Raptors, making his statement, his presence felt in this first game. Do you think that this is legitimate with Dennis?
I think he's solid, if that's what you mean by legitimate. I think he's going to be just fine on the team. I don't think he's going to average over 20 points. That's not even where his career average is. He's never averaged 20 points per game. So,
no.
I don't think he'll come close to like Atlanta numbers, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was averaging like maybe on the low end of that, like 15, 16, 17 points per game. 18 you'll take all day. But I just think he's a leader. He's been in the league long enough that, what is it, a decade now, that he can lead by example, and I think the distribution aspect, sorry, of this team that Darko wants to enforce suits him, because he was there with Darko in OKC, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, so he was familiar. He was with OKC for 2 years, in 2018 through 2020, and that's where he had established a good rapport with him meaning Darko. Mm-hmm. In the 2018-19 season, he averaged 15.5 points per game. In the 2019-2020 season with OKC, he averaged 18.9. His career high in average points was the year before he went to OKC, so in Atlanta, and it was 19.4 points per game.
Yeah.
So never been at the 20 mark, but he's been close a few times. Usually expect him to be at about 13, 14, 15 points per game. His last 2 years, he's been a little bit below that at 11 and 12.5, just like rounding there. Right. But I think, you know, he has an opportunity here to be at about that 13, 14 mark. And if you get him at that, I think that's fantastic.
Sure.
And he's showing that not only has he got an eye for the scoring, he's distributing the ball. So I think that with Darko's system of ball movement, it's playing really well for Dennis. It's opening up looks for a lot of guys. I don't think I've seen that many open looks for guys in a game, in one particular game, in a while.
Yeah.
Just because the defense is shifting, because they're like, where the fuck are we supposed to be?
Right.
They're trying to predict stuff, and again, they're not just like, okay, we got to go one-on-one with Pascal, watch for the spin, or watch a pick and roll at the top. Like, it's not predictable anymore. It's like, okay, where are they going to go with this ball? Guys are cutting in. Pascal had almost an open bucket.
Yeah.
It would have been probably 50-50 contested, which he most likely would have made. He dished it out. So, and then that guy dished it again, and I'm like, holy shit. Like,
ball movement, yeah.
The ball movement is incredible. So, you know, you can't be overly ball movement heavy, because then you're going to start passing up on open looks. But I do like seeing that, and I think that's going to benefit Dennis. And, you know, his career high in assists, I'm just going to take a look here very quickly and scan, 6.3 in Atlanta. So, in his OKC days, he was at 4. So he was a little bit more of a scorer in OKC, but, you know, if he can get to, like, 13, 14 points per game, give you, like, 6-7 assists a night, you'll take that from someone who, when you're not on a championship, championship aspiring team, you're not leaning on him to be a points guy anyways, still take those assists, because you have guys that can dish it, like Pascal, OG, Scotty. Those type of guys can have ball movement in their game. So,
yeah, but see, that's, you name the players, and that's where it ends. That's why I don't see the assist number creeping higher than his career average.
Yeah.
Probably will be around, like, the 4, 5, 6s would be just right.
Yeah.
I don't see it being there, because we just don't have a lot of shooting outside of him, Barnes, Siakam, OG. So, I mean, it depends on how this is going to be scripted. It depends on how, if it was just an off night shooting for these guys. But yeah, I would like a little more scoring. Like I said, like, if he can average 15, and I don't know that that's asking a lot from my point guard, but if it is, okay, fine. Give me 13. Fine.
Yeah. But I mean, you have
other,
I think you and I would agree that there are three other guys in the starting lineup that could average more than that, than Dennis, and probably should be. Dennis on that totem pole should be fourth in that starting lineup.
Yeah, shooting wise. Yes.
Scoring. It should be Pascal, and then you can say I'd put OG, and then Scotty, and then Dennis, and then Jakob.
Jakob, yeah.
Maybe Scotty and OG, maybe Scotty is closer to OG as season goes along, whatever, but that's sort of where I have it now. So when you have Pascal, OG, and Scotty putting up shots, that doesn't leave too much for Dennis. So he's got to be super efficient with his shots. And he had an efficient night.
Oh, he was fine. Yeah.
And then he put up his points. So he's got to continuously play like that to get his points. But
yeah, I had no issues with his game at all.
No, and I thought he had a great showing for the Raptors.
Yes, and he exceeded my expectations coming in. And the leadership quality that we thought would be missing from a Fred VanVleet, and you know, still lacking from the absence of Kyle Lowry. I'm not saying he's fully now cemented as the team leader. Maybe he is in the locker room. It's possible. But in terms of, you know, him cementing himself as he could be a leader on the floor.
Yeah.
Showed it, and I was very comfortable with it. It was great.
I want to pick your brain a little bit, and I don't have this on the agenda, but I'm just thinking about this.
Yeah.
Fred VanVleet had some comments about this team as he exited, and saying that there was internal beef, for lack of a better word, in a TLDR from me, that veterans weren't getting along with rookies, rookies weren't getting along with veterans. Like, there was a bit of a culture clash. And Scottie Barnes was asked about this by Sports, I think, Danielle. I can't remember her last name now.
Sure.
But anyways, she was doing an interview with him, and she asked him about it, and she said, what do you think about those comments? And he paused for a long while, and he goes, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, I mean, I think that it's sort of telling as well too, that maybe Fred was a bit of an issue for this team. Like, maybe we talk about leadership with Fred VanVleet, maybe on the court potentially, and maybe trying to set an example, but maybe he was upset about a lot of shit and it was carrying over, because these guys seem to really be fucking happy, and there seems to be some life here. And I don't know if that comes from Darko, if it comes from Dennis, if it comes from a rejuvenated, you know, Gary Trent, who's saying like, my fucking bitch of a coach is gone, and now I have a guy that I can actually talk to. I don't know where it comes from, but it feels like this team actually has a different style of leadership that might be working for them.
I can't really comment. I don't. Fred's probably, again, in that lineage of the Serges, the Marc Gasols, the Kyles, the DeRozans, Jonas, like, they all operated, I don't want to say in a very old school way, because this was only like 10 years ago we're talking about, so it's not 10, maybe fewer than that, but I just think he was trying to assert being the old guy on the team and being the, you know, let me lead you guys by example. And there was a clash of Scottie being, well, I'm the fucking franchise, bro. Let me lead by example. I am the standard. I mean, there was a report not too long ago by Zach Lowe saying that the Raptors had Scottie Barnes off the table when it came from Lillard talks and KD talks. We knew about the KD talks. I wasn't sure about the Lillard talks, but it's been since at least reported. I don't want to say confirmed. It's been reported by Zach Lowe, who is pretty reliable.
That's a reliable source.
Yeah. So, if you had that sort of culture clash of identities, being the franchise and the leader, it's going to create friction. It's going to, I don't want to say divide a locker room, but I could imagine that the younger guys are going to be like, no, I'm kind of with Scottie on this. And the older guys like Thad are going to be like, no, I'm kind of with Fred on this. Like, that's how we do things. So when you remove those aspects and you remove that toxicity from the locker room, and I'm not saying Fred's a toxic person in and of himself, his philosophy just might be different than what the younger guys and what the new era of the Raptors were driving towards.
Right.
There's going to be conflict. So Barnes knows. He knows exactly, the beef or whatever. I just think he wants to put it behind him. That's the vibe I got looking at it. And he said it with a smile too. Yeah. So I just think he is just like, I don't want to talk shit on television. I'm not going to call a guy out. I'm not going to stoop to this level that maybe Fred had to like allude to. So
yeah,
things are fine now, and that's all I care about. So you mentioned it. It's a new vibe. It's a new generation. It's a new era. I don't really like. A lot of people were talking last night on Twitter about what Fred VanVleet was doing, and I was just like, I don't care what Fred VanVleet is doing right now. It's like when you make a fantasy football trade and you look at the guy, the stats that you traded. I never do that because I'm like, he's not on my roster. I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah,
I don't care. Yeah, that's how I felt about Fred. He's not on the roster. I don't care what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that, you know, Scotty definitely had a lot to say, and I feel like he bit his tongue, which is completely fine. And I think that that's smart of him to do that. So I'm going to move off of one young player and on to another one. Let's talk very quickly here. I don't want to get too much in this because it's not a huge talking point, but I do want to talk a little bit about Grady Dick. Obviously, with Grady, maybe we are expecting a little bit more run from him. He only played 2 minutes, shot the ball once, wasn't even a three. So, I mean, we've seen him attempt an NBA three yet. I was a little bit surprised. I didn't expect him to log big minutes. I didn't expect him realistically to make an impact one way or the other on this game. I just thought he might be an extra body. I was surprised it was only used for 2 minutes in this game. Did that surprise you at all, or is that just me? I don't know. Cause that definitely surprised me a little bit.
Nah, game flow. He's not ready. There was a tweet by Lewenberg. Darko said about Grady, he's got to slow down himself before the game slows down for him. So, and he encouraged patience and time, a lot of patience and time. So I just don't think he's ready. I don't think he's ready for the competition level of the NBA. That shot he put up, like it was sort of like a scoop underneath the rim layup kind of thing. It was wild. I didn't hate it because the maneuvering of his body and how he got to the rim was just fine. But he camped a lot in the corner, so there wasn't a lot of movement there. I just don't think he's ready. So was I surprised? Maybe in the moment, in hindsight, it makes sense. But if he wasn't such a highly touted shooter, I wouldn't be surprised. If he was picked like late or maybe in the second round, he's not playing at all. I think he got those 2 minutes because, hey, it's your NBA debut. We're going to give you some time just to get your feet wet and, you know, for the home crowd to welcome you. And then you're out. You're not ready.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, again, I didn't see anything in preseason. I don't watch preseason. Same. You and I have said this on our previous podcast. So I did see that he was like box score watching. I did notice that he had some games that weren't great. I did not also notice that he had some games that were. So maybe not super consistent. But again, you're right. Like, you know, you only had 2 minutes. So it's hard to judge off those 2 minutes. But obviously the coaching staff have been eyes on all year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe he's just not entirely ready yet, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is, you know, a shot at him. I don't think that this is anything negative. I think this, if I'm Grady and I see that, I go, okay, I gotta work more.
Yes.
Like, the coaching staff think that I'm worth 2 minutes. So let me show them that I'm worth 5. Then let me show them that I'm worth 10. Then let me show them that I'm worth 15, 20. And then let me show them that I can get in the starting lineup.
Yep.
So it's just one of those things. Just work hard and keep your head down. I was surprised. I thought he might have gotten, when I say surprised, I'm not saying I thought he was going to get like 15 minutes.
Sure. Yeah.
But I thought, you know, maybe Malachi Flynn minutes at most, like maybe 10. I was thinking like 7 to 10 minutes is what he was probably going to get. Yeah. Just to be a threat to shoot the ball. However, the Raptors, like I had mentioned, they shot 40% from three. So, you know, they were shooting the ball pretty effectively. Darko probably didn't think that he needed a spark like that. So he's like, you know, you're not really ready for anything else, like what we had discussed or what you alluded to earlier. So he's like, I'm just going to keep you there. So I do get it from that point, from hindsight. I just figured he might get a little bit more run. But I just want to get your opinion on that.
Sure, okay.
That's pretty much it. I think we want to get into game predictions before we wrap the podcast up. As we're coming back in just under 2 weeks, we're recording this on Thursday, October 26th. So Is there anything else Raptors-wise that you wanted to touch on from the team or from the players before we move into game predictions and put a bow on this?
Yeah, I mean, exceeded expectations. I walked in with none. So.
Oh, yeah. None is more expectations than what I had.
Yeah, there you go. So, like, I felt closer to that 2021-22 season where it was just, like, kind of fun to watch them than I did the 22-23 season where I was like, this is sort of a wet blanket season. So what I mean by that is the 21-22 season, my expectations were so low and they exceeded it, and it was sort of exciting, and I was really vibing, and you could see a future. I'm not saying that the future is revealed with this team and this is it. I'm saying it started off on a high note. They had a competitive game. They won that game. They played well. They played hard. That's the type of team that you expect them to capitalize on, and they did. I loved it. I don't expect this moving forward for every single game.
Yeah.
But hey, at least they're catching the Bulls at the right time next game, speaking of predictions. So
yes, they are. Players only meeting with Chicago Bulls after game one is not always great, but to kind of conclude what your thought was, I totally agree as well too. It was nice and refreshing to actually be excited to watch Raptors basketball. It was nice to be able to watch a team and actually say, you know, I'm not bored of watching this team. I know it's game one, but the stylistic play of the Toronto Raptors was exciting, and that's nice. The expectations are low, and they'll continue to be low for me, at least for the remainder of the season. I just want to watch good basketball.
Yeah.
And results to me don't matter unless we get to a point where we're like in an in-between seat that I'm like, okay, we got to pick a fucking lane again. We talked about picking a lane, but you know, if they lose, like, oh, well, if they played hard and they lose, okay. Yes. If they play hard and they win, okay. I'm not going to sit and dwell on a result for this season.
Same.
So, yeah, it is nice to see that from the Toronto Raptors. We normally do two sweet moment of the week. Obviously, there's only been one game.
Yeah,
we'll wait. So we're not going to do that. We'll do that in the next podcast. I think if there was a two sweet moment of the week, for me, it would have been the celebration of Darko in the locker room after the game.
Yeah.
Where he looked like he had an out-of-body experience, and it was really fun to watch. And it was really nice to see everyone sort of rallying around him like that and, you know, celebrating. Obviously they're going to celebrate a first win for a head coach in the NBA, but I think just his reaction to, like, you can tell it meant a lot to him. So congratulations to Darko for his first win as an NBA head coach. Congratulations to the Raptors staff as well for a good showing last night. They came out prepared and showed. So
yeah,
kudos to them. Game predictions. Let's start. So tomorrow, of the time of this recording, tomorrow, Friday, October 27th, Chicago Bulls in Chicago. What do you think?
I originally had this penciled in as a loss.
Uh-huh.
I'm going with the win because you're having a players-only meeting after game one.
Yeah.
Something's wrong. Something's not right.
Have you ever heard of a players-only meeting after the first game season?
No way.
Not even in the NFL have I heard of that.
No. No. You wait. That is reactionary.
So reactionary.
Yeah. So I'm calling this a dub. Let's go 2-0.
I also agree. I did have that as a loss as well. I'm going to go with a dub here. So a 2-0 start for the Toronto Raptors is what we're predicting, which is actually quite nice. On to the next, we have a back-to-backer. They come back home. The Toronto Raptors come back home on Saturday, October 28th to play the Philadelphia 76ers. It is the Nick Nurse reunion, the reunion tour for Nick Nurse in Toronto. Is this a win or is this a loss?
It's a back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
Travel. Philly's good. Calling it a loss. But I feel like the crowd's going to show up for this game. Hard.
Yeah. I mean, Philadelphia is not coming off a back-to-back. They play their first game tonight. First game of the season they haven't played yet. So first game of the season is tonight in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come into Toronto for their second game. So their home opener is not even until Sunday against Portland. So that's a tougher start. Like, I'm not saying Toronto's a tough second team, but it's a tougher start when you start two on the road and one against a really good fucking team. That's and that's in the Milwaukee Bucks. But I'm also gonna say that's a loss. I was very tempted to actually list this as a win. I was tempted, but a second game of a back-to-back coming home with the travel, I think Nick is going to plan well for certain guys. But I think then the players can counter maybe and understand what Nick runs for plays and stuff. So it's going to be an interesting chess match. I think a very strategic game, but I still think that Toronto will lose just based on extra factors.
Let me ask you before you move on.
Mm-hmm.
Two-part question.
All right, let's do it.
Do you think the Raptors / the powers that be, ownership, whatnot, will honor Nick Nurse, and do you think they want to?
I think they honor him. I don't think they want to.
I agree. You have to. He won a championship.
He won a ring for you.
Yeah, you have to.
It would actually be egregious not to.
Right.
I don't think that they want to, but it would be egregious not to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Monday, October 30th. Yeah, and that's also the Philadelphia game is 3 games in 4 nights mm-hmm. for the Toronto Raptors. So again, mm-hmm. that's another factor. It's just not good for them.
Yeah.
Philly will be a little bit more rested. There's going to be no James Harden. He will travel with the team, but he's not going to play in the first 2 games. So maybe that's an opportunity, but Tyrese Maxey will put on a masterclass mm-hmm. and drop 50 on our heads, so it's okay. Monday, October 30th against the Portland Trail Blazers and the superstar that is DeAndre Ayton that put up 4 points last night. thoughts on this one?
I think it's a win. Scoot let us down. We hyped up Scoot all off season. We're like, draft Scoot, draft, trade for Scoot. Yeah, he didn't have a good debut. Whatever. I still think the Raptors win this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so they should, yeah. Right? The Raptors definitely should win this game. Scoot Henderson in the game against the Clippers where they lost 123-111. Scoot Henderson shot 5 of 11, 0 of 3 from 3. He was a minus 16. He had 11 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds. Sounds about right for a rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, when you got DeAndre Ayton putting up 4 points
mm-hmm.
in a night. He only had 4 shots in the game. How is Matisse Thybulle shooting 7 shots in a game?
Yeah, dude, I hear you. But
that, like, is horrible.
They have size. That's what concerns me about this game. They have size. So this is. I feel like this is going to be similar to the Minnesota game where they match up well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you have Ayton, you have Williams there now. They have size.
Robert Williams was a minus 23 last night. It was horrible. Anthony Simons was a minus 27. Jeremy Graham was a minus 22.
If you're a Blazers fan, you want them to lose this game.
1,000% you do.
Yeah.
Of course you do. You want them to lose every game pretty much.
Yes.
So I'll give that a win. Raptors in this proverbial world start 3-1, which yes. might get the rumor mill, or not rumor mill, but might get the Raptors fans churning a little bit, maybe a little bit excited. But Wednesday, November 1st, they face off against Milwaukee in Milwaukee. Yeah. I think both you and I are going to lean into that as a L.
Yeah, this and the next, another back-to-back.
Yeah, it's a back-to-back. Milwaukee, November 1st, we'll chalk that up as an L, and then they take on Milwaukee at home, yes. not in Milwaukee, so that's a mistake by me. But they take Milwaukee on at home, November 1st. I think they'll lose that. Then they travel on the road, the first of 4 games on the road, the second game of a back-to-back against Philly in Philly. I'm also going to chalk that up as a loss, similar to you. But
yeah.
And then the final game before the sweet, sultry voices of Adam and Connor return to your podcast catchers, Sunday, November 5th at San Antonio to see the freak show Wemby and the San Antonio Spurs. What is the result of this game?
I think it's a win on mm-hmm. the road. We're lucky this game is at 3:30 because the Bills play at night that day. So We're good. Or are they playing Monday against Cincy?
The Bills on that week, that is week number 10? Week 5 is a 8:20 game on Sunday against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Perfect. So bang, bang, right there. You're going to watch the Raptors and you're going to watch the Bills back-to-back.
That's it, back-to-back, and hopefully you get a back-to-back win.
Yeah, so. I think they win this just fine.
I do too.
Yeah.
And that would wrap up our game predictions. That means that we have the Raptors sitting at 4-3 after 7 games of the season. Probably what I was expecting. So.
Hey, before we wrap up, real quick question before we do. We never talked about the Vegas over-unders for the team. I just wanted to get your quick take on this. Vegas has Raptors winning, I want to say, hold on, I have it right here, 36.5.
Under.
I agree. As long as a trade's made.
Like, yeah, but this is why I'm saying under. Because
you anticipate them being
sellers. I'm anticipating moves to be made that do not favor the success of the Toronto Raptors.
Okay. Yeah, I say under as well. And even if, like, when we did our predictions, I said barring any trades, I still had them winning 34 games.
Yeah.
So I would go under.
Yeah, I think so.
That's it.
I think so. Unless they continue to win, then they're going to go 82-0, and then we'll look really silly.
Yeah.
So.
Fine.
Could happen.
Sure.
All right, if you're betting people and those lines are still up there, smash.
Yeah.
You know, smash the under. But don't take betting advice from us. We're not actually professionals at this.
No.
We're not professionals really at anything. We try to be, but, you know, we try to have professional voices or professional sounding podcasts. We just try our best.
We're doing well at faking it.
Hey, fake it till you make it, you know?
That's it.
And that actually about wraps up everything that we're going to talk about today on the South of Six podcast. You can find us on any one of the podcatchers that you listen to. Obviously, you're listening to us, so you found us somewhere. We are available on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, anywhere that you can find them except for SoundCloud. Adam tried to rap on there and he got us banned. So we're actually not banned. We just don't.
Yeah.
Don't have anything.
Spit way too hard for that.
we broke the site. And not in a good way. You can find us on Twitter or X at South of the Six, spelled with the number 6 and the letters IX. And you can also find our personal Twitters at Adam Corsair and at Connor Chambers. That is Adam Corsair. I am Connor Chambers, and we are now officially done. We'll talk to you guys later next time. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the South of the Six podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at South of the Six and subscribe to our show. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Yeah, we're everywhere. While you're at it, if you liked what you heard, do us a solid and leave us 5 stars and a quick review. We appreciate it. Thanks again. Go Raptors!